Okay, so we have this chus today to talk about the bracha of Albir Chametz and to look through that prism at some of the questions that we've talked about throughout the whole Zman of what exactly is the nature of Bedikas Chametz, of Bittul Chametz, of Tashvisu, of the interrelationship between them all, and of our most recent sugya of the purpose of Birchas HaMitzvos. So, first off, our Gemara tells us on Daf Zayin a number of chidushim, some of which we've considered already, especially those in the broader picture of Birchas HaMitzvos. But now, to turn our attention specifically to Bir Chametz, so the Gemara tells us that there is this obligation of Habodek Tzarech Shiyavarech, that the bracha should be recited in conjunction with Bedikas Chametz, even though, and we'll discuss this part more, but the text relates to Bir Chametz. And the Gemara doesn't really explain that. The Gemara takes up the question of whether it should be with a lamed or with an al, and the differences between what would be Livayer or Al Bir Chametz. But the question of why it's Biur specifically is one really left to the Rishonim to discuss, and we'll come to that second. But first, what is the idea of making the bracha specifically now? Especially if the bracha is going to be targeted at Biur, for whichever reason that we'll come to in a minute. So why should the bracha be recited at the time of Bittul Chametz? So what are our thoughts about that? Why is the bracha recited then? Do you have any theories? Yeah, Ari?
I think this is how some Rishonim said this is the start of the Bir process. They should make it at the initial stage, which is the Bezika.
Okay, so that's certainly one approach that you see in the Ritva, and probably in the Ran, and others, that it's all one hemshuch, it's all one process. So this is bedika for the purposes of hashbasa. So therefore it makes sense to make the bracha now. And some of the Rishonim point to a pasuk, which we're going to emphasize for the sake of synergy, because it's from a sheni that we covered, so part of our chazara for this man, that sheni of Parshas Kisavo, you find the phrase, Bi'artis HaKodesh Min HaBayis, and some of the Rishonim point to that, that a part of the process of Biur is taking it out of the house and finding it in the house in order to take it out. So here's where it all begins. So therefore, that's an appropriate place for the bracha. Now, the association of this act with the mitzvah of Tashbisu specifically, if that's the idea, right? So presumably if we're saying that this is the Tchilas mitzvah, that this connects to the Bir, it's all one process. So then the idea that this is a part of Tashbisu, so that works especially for the Ran, right? So to go back to day one, then we saw the question of what is Bedikas Chametz for. So we saw that there were various views in the Rishonim. And while Rashi said it was because of Bayura Bayimatze, and Tosfos says that it was because we were afraid you might come to eat it, the Ran had a different way of looking at it, that essentially the obligation of Tashbisu Min HaTorah had two options. It could be either Bittul or Bedika, and Midrabanan, we insist on both, both Bittul and Bedika. So the Ran, who also has this approach like the Ritva, the Ran is the Shitaso, that this is part of the Kiyum of Tashbisu. So therefore, to make the Bracha now, at the beginning of that process, all very well and good. That all makes sense. What about if you say differently? Right, so the Rush has it with a little bit of a different spin. How does the Rush understand this idea of Chazal telling us to make a bracha here? Right, and some of the Rishonim are focused especially on the fact that not only are we told to make a bracha here, but the fact that the Gemara makes a big deal out of making a bracha at all. Right, if we understand that there is an institution of Birchas HaMitzvos, certainly not limited to this mitzvah, In fact, we assume it's the default, and we ask the question only when we have mitzvos that don't have brachos. So why is the Gemara making a big production about the fact that there is a bracha here at all, and why here specifically? So the Rush has a comment that maybe you would have thought this isn't so much of a mitzvah. So therefore, in order to correct us on that point, we institute a bracha here specifically. Now, that language of not being so much of a mitzvah, so what does that mean? And in fact, one could ask also that maybe, indeed, why is it a mitzvah at all that should get a bracha? If we're not working off the Ran's assumption that it's all part of Teshbisu, but if we do come from a Rashi perspective, and maybe a Tosfos perspective also, that this is in order to save us from Ba'yira Ba'yimatze, or to save us from eating Chametz, so this is really just the avoidance of a Losase. And do we make brachos on acts that are simply stepping around the Losase? At the Nesivis, in his Makor Chaim, he compares Bedikas Chametz to Bedikas Toloim, that if you're about to eat a fruit that's likely to have worms in it, so you have an obligation to investigate and to see if that's indeed the case. So you make a bracha on that? No. So why would you make a bracha here? Right. So the fact that our Gemara is telling us that there is a bracha is significant, and so significant, in fact, that it prompted the Pnei Yoshua and the Nod Behuda and others to say that this is actually a raya, maybe against Rashi. Right? Maybe this is really all support for the Ran. Just like we said a minute ago that it works well for the Ran L'shitaso. So maybe Taka only works for the Ran. So it seems to bother the Pnei Yeshua and the Nod Behuda, because if you say this is all part of Teshbisu, so then Matovu Manoim, you should make a bracha on it. But if you say that this is just a way of making sure that we're not going to violate an Isser, so we talked a little bit about the first week, about what steps are we obligated to take to avoid an Isser that we're not sure is there in the first place. But however we look at that question, why should there be a bracha associated with it? And this is where also the Tzlach comments, if you recall, this was also something we mentioned the first week, that it's interesting that Rashi brings up Ba'yira Ba'yimatze. Why didn't Rashi say that it was because of Teshbisu? Like the Ran said, that we have the obligation of Bedika. And what the Tzlach actually says is that it goes to that question of just how far you have to go. That if the mitzvah was simply the mitzvah saseh of Teshbisu, so then we wouldn't necessarily have such a responsibility for areas where we don't really know that there is chametz there. But the more chamer consideration of the losase of Ba'yira and Ba'yimatze, so that's what pushes the bedika to exist as a concern. And once we have bedika, so then we want to have a bracha on it, so then it's associated, we focus with Tashbisu, because the Maisa, that's where there's a positive mitzvah to make a bracha. But what also really seems to be the case, based on Rashi and Tosfos, is that, yes, the motivation for this institution is the fear of something, either the fear of Ba'yira, Ba'yimatze, or the fear of eating chametz. And yes, it's true that when you just avoid a fear, so and avoid a iser, you don't make a bracha on that, and you don't make a bracha on bedikas toloim that the Nesivos compared it to. But what the key point here is that there is a mitzvah d'rabanan that motivated by that fear, so Chazal instituted the din d'rabanan of bedikas chametz. And once they formalized that, so then it makes sense to look at it as a mitzvah, to look at it as a positive act upon which we make a bracha. And this also goes to our first week discussion of whether you say the concern is daraisa, the concern is drabanan. Either way, still the formalization of bedika as a mitzvah with a bracha, so that we can understand as drabanan. That Chazal said, because of this consideration, here's the process that has to be done in order to address the concern. And the fact that we relate to it as a mitzvah, this is a point that the Rav Rucham Olshin, I don't think we've had a chance to mention his sefer yet this man, so we have to get it in now on the last day, because his farim on the Moadim are beautiful. It's a beautiful volume, Ziyarach Moadim, on the Yom Tovim, on both the Drush and the Shiurim, both Halacha and Machshava, the beautiful, beautiful pieces. And so his Sefer on Pesach, so he talks about this issue. And he observes along these lines as well, that what Rashi is telling us is that there is a formalized mitzvah derabanan, and therefore, that's what our Gemara is saying, along the lines of Rashi and Tosus, that there is a formalized din derabanan. And to give us an opportunity to chazer some more sugyas, at least just by identifying them, so we saw a couple of sugyas along the way that highlighted the fact that we are dealing with a mitzvah specifically here, right? What did we see along the way that were generalized mitzvah sugyas, but that the Gemara brought them in the context of Bedikas Chametz? Right, so some quick chazar, what sugyas did we see that general mitzvah ideas applied to Bedikas Chametz? One is Zrizin, right? I was about to say, you should enthusiastically jump up and give me the answer. So Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvah, so there's a general mitzvah klal being applied to Bedikas Chametz. And also, anything else? The assumption that a person would be happy to have a mitzvah done with his property. So here, the inclusion of these sugyas along the way, along our journey here, helps to strengthen the sugya itself, helps to identify for us that we're dealing with not just the avoidance of a isser, even if that's the motive and that's what pushed us here, but we are dealing with what was formalized as a mitzvah d'rabbanan of bedikas chametz, and therefore the bracha is consistent with that. If you look in the Chiddush Rabbeinu David, if you have a Rabbeinu David to look in, so the Rabbeinu David here emphasizes that our Gemara is saying what it says in order to tell us that there is a bracha on a d'rabbanan as well, because that was a point that if you look in the Sugi of Hanukkah, and the Gemara and Sukkah as well, that was a discussion among the Amoraim, the whole idea that we make a bracha on a mitzvah, even when it's a mitzvah derabbanan, was a matter that had to be established. And that gives us a little bit of chazara for our derabbanan discussions, right? We talked about what the source is for dinim derabbanan, the idea that the Gemara quotes and the Rambam emphasizes against the Ramban, that the pasuk of Lo Sasser is the source for Dinim Durabanan. So the Gemara in Shabbos invokes that to justify why we could say not only Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosa Vitzivanu by mitzvahs that we can find in the Chumash itself, but also by mitzvahs Durabanan as well. So therefore, that opportunity is what is reflected here, that the mitzvah that we recite on a din d'rabbanan needs to be stressed that that exists, and that's what perhaps our Gemara is conveying to us as well. And maybe you may not have a Rabbeinu Dab, but if you look in the back of the Gemara, you have the Mitzvah Eson. The Mitzvah Eson makes a similar point. Takes it a little bit further by pointing to the fact it's not only a mitzvah d'rabbanan, but it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan on a suffix. So I have to figure out exactly what he means by that. He points to the Magid Mishnah, which we've also made reference to, that the dinim of Sveikos that would push for a more makil attitude are generally not invoked in Bedikas Chametz, because the whole point of Bedikas Chametz is to address a suffix situation. We know that it's a suffix. That's how the whole concept gets off the ground. And yet we're told that we have to look anyway, so therefore we're not Mekel Mishum Safek by Bedikas Chametz. So he incorporates that into his explanation why a bracha on Bedikas Chametz is a chiddush, because not only is it a mitzvah derabbanan, but it's a mitzvah derabbanan on a safek. I'm not sure why that should matter so much, because again, the idea is that the safek is the motive, but once you acknowledge that safek, so the din derabbanan is stama din derabbanan, so it would seem like it should be the same as any other, but that's a point that he emphasizes here as well. Okay, so far so good? Everybody with me? Okay, so we've got a couple of our sugyas already we're able to include into this discussion. Okay, so in addition, so the Rishonim discuss that question, why the bracha is here, and why we need to be told it's a bracha at all. But then the question is, okay, if we're going to make a bracha on Bedikas Chametz, so why do we use the language of Bir Chametz? So, not in order to remind you that Bir is also Chametz, although there are people who would like to forget that, but perhaps more to do with the Hebrew word Bir. So why use Bior Chametz for the bracha if Bedika is what's happening in front of us? So here there are different approaches in the Rishonim. The Ritva says it's because the Ikar Mitzvah is the Bior, so this is all on the way to Bior, so therefore we make the bracha on the Ikar Mitzvah, because if we would search for the Chametz and decide not to do anything about it and just leave it lying around on our kitchen table, so for sure we wouldn't have accomplished anything. This is not just a search mission, but it's a search and destroy mission. So ultimately the searching is for the purpose of the destroying. So it makes sense to formulate the bracha around the biur. Should note that in that context, he also mentions that even if one were to assume that the chi of bedika is minat Torah, it's still true. That it's still for the purposes of bir, and therefore it makes sense to make the bracha with that language. Rabbeinu David writes that the language of bir includes the whole process, like we mentioned before, our synergy from Sheni and Kisavo. So therefore, that language is more inclusive, so better to use that in order to address everything that we're doing. The Beis Yosef in Simen Tav Lamed Beis, so the Beis Yosef has two approaches as to the question of why do we not formulate a bracha around, say, Bittel Chametz, but instead on Bir. And one of his approaches is very often quoted, and we'll see that it's really based on the Torah. But the Beis Yosef says that it's a mitzvah shebelev, that bittul is something that happens mentally, and therefore we don't make a bracha on that. So I think we mentioned last week that when the question comes up of any given mitzvah, why is there no bracha on it, when we find that to be the case, so I mentioned that there are certain go-to sources that are the first places you think of, okay, let's see, maybe this will answer it. And that the Teshuvas HaRashba, we spoke about last week, that anything that depends on someone else's participation, we don't make a bracha on. That's very often one of the first possible answers that's invoked as to any given mitzvah, why is there no bracha. Another one is this Beis Yosef, that the Beis Yosef's premise that you don't make a bracha on something that is belave, that's also often invoked to explain other kinds of mitzvos, why they may not necessarily have a bracha. So it's interesting to consider why that should be. Why should it matter just because a mitzvah is belave? Perhaps you could suggest that if we assume that the purpose of a bracha is to make sure that you're actually doing it purposefully and you're doing it Bekavana l'shem mitzvah. So when you're doing an action that we don't necessarily know why you're doing the action, or it's not necessarily obvious to you why you're doing the action, so then the bracha could be necessary in order to establish what it's there for. But when you're doing something solely belev, so then presumably that is already connected to the kavana, that's where it's happening. So maybe there's less of a, maybe there's less of a need, perhaps. I have to still think about that a little bit more. Ari?
Isn't it mashmah the other way? Because if it's only the lave, then we know it's varmish lave and it was a varm, so there's no like tangible like mashmah ut. So
to give it significance.
You should need a formulation to materialize that intention.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and there's a svara like that as well. And also, if you really want to get into the sugya of mitzvah srichas kavana, so we find in the later svarim that some do assume that if there's an action, it needs less kavana, you know, that the action itself provides its own kavana. So, but that's it's coming from a different side of the fence. I mean, God willing, we can get to that sugya a little bit next semester because it comes up in the mitzvah of matzah. So, to keep that thought in mind, how exactly this ties in with this. But for now, so this is what Beis Yosef says in his first theory, that a mitzvah shavalev wouldn't require a bracha. He also mentions that if you're going to choose, if we have one big process here, and we're going to choose what to make a bracha on, to make a bracha on bittul, or to make the bracha on beer. So we'd rather make the bracha on beer because that includes both directions. And the same is not true for bittul. You can make a bracha on bittul, that's not going to cover everything. So trying to pick what language to use seems to be a better idea to use the language of beer even when talking about bittul included. Okay. So, there are many interesting details and practical situations that come up as far as the question of how this bracha that the Gemara teaches us, how it is applied or isn't applied. So, one of the issues that comes up is, we saw the sugya on Davav, of somebody who is traveling. Right? So, if somebody sets sail before Pesach, so is he obligated in the Bedikas Chametz? So the Gemara has two scenarios, if you recall, where he would be Chayev. One is if he leaves within 30 days before Yontif, and the other is if he leaves more than 30 days before Yontif, but he plans on coming back on Yontif. So then the obligation could go back even more than 30 days. But somebody who is in this situation where they are traveling early, and they're on this boat trip before the 14th, so the Shulchan Aruch says you have to do the Bedika, and the Rama commenting on there, the Rama says, but you wouldn't make a bracha on that Bedika. That he quotes from the Kolbo. That on the early Bedika, you don't make a bracha. So why not? So the Gra says it's because you're not mevatel it then. And the Mishnah Berurah says similarly, but maybe different in a key way. It says that the whole assumption is that it's part of the process leading up to the destruction of the chametz, and you're not going to be destroying it now. You could be using the chametz for the next month. So therefore, it's not connected to the beer in the actual sense, so therefore you shouldn't make the bracha then. However, the Bach is machalik. The Bach says, quoting from the Ritva, I mean, not quoting from the Ritva, Bach, the Ritva says the same thing, quoting from the Ra'ab. The Bach didn't quote the Ritva, but the Ritva and the Bach both say that they think we should distinguish between these two situations. That the two early scenarios, that either you're leaving within 30 days or you are leaving before 30 days but you're planning on coming back. So there he writes that you should make a bracha on the within 30 days trip. But not on the trip that's before 30 days when you might be coming back on Pesach or you are coming back on Pesach. Because then, in that case, it's only just to prevent you from running into chametz when you're home. So what's the difference between the two? Why draw a distinction? So it seems that within 30 days, that's when you have the actual mitzvah of bedikas chametz. Right? So this to bring us back to our sugya of Lamed Yom Kodem Machag. And the idea that within a 30-day period, the actual chiyuvim start becoming responsibilities. So then maybe there's a distinction to be drawn then, and Rav Olshan has a discussion along these lines as well, that within 30 days, avoiding the chametz is a mitzvah. So the Bedikas Chametz is set up as an institution of obligation. While leaving before 30 days, but you might come back on Pesach, that's different. That's out of just the functional concern that you might run into chametz, so you have to avoid a los haseh. But it's not formulated as the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Akiva?
Is it possible to say that since Bedika and Havar are connected, and theoretically the bracha is on like the full action of those two, and the source of Mordechai, I forget who it was, saying that you can't really do Havara until at least feel like Sheshavos or around that time, and so the 430 days you can't connect the two. Can connect the two, so the bracha won't be able to be really said on like the full
ma'aseh.
But within 30 days, and when you actually approach those
manbir,
then you could actually make the bracha.
Except that you're still not going to be mevar that chametz in the same way. I mean, you're right that there is a connection there, but it doesn't seem to explain it totally. Now, it relates to another part of the question, that if we assume that the person who's on the boat when he's traveling, so once he's away from home, but still when the time of the Isser comes on Erev Pesach, he should be mevatel l'chametz then. So maybe should he make a bracha on that? Should he make a bracha on that bitul chametz? So that was a machlokas rishonim. The Tur quoted a machlokas rishonim on that point. That he quoted the Bala Itter, said that you should make a bracha on that. But he himself, the Tur says, no, you don't make a bracha on that. And he's invoking there the same svar that the Beis Yosef would invoke, that this is something done belev, so therefore no bracha on the bittel. So how could you explain the view of the Bala Itter that there is a bracha? Right, so if you have the Beis Yosef's point, like the Torah is saying, that the Torah is saying first, that you don't make a bracha on something shebelev, what's the machlokus between him and the Bala Itter? Why does the Bala Itter disagree? Where's the nekudas ha-machlokus there? So the truth is, there are a couple of possible avenues to explore as to what the Itter's opinion is. And Rav Olshan has a discussion about this, going through all the possibilities as well. So one possibility is that maybe he disagrees with Sisot. Maybe he doesn't acknowledge what the Torah says, that you don't make a bracha on something should believe. But another possibility, as the Bach explains, is that maybe he doesn't agree that Bittul is believe purely. And maybe he feels that it has to be spoken out loud. And therefore, maybe you need a bracha on that. Or another more interesting possibility for our chazara and for our so far pretty successful effort to get almost every sugya tied into this one. So what exactly is bittul in the first place? All right, so if you recall, so we saw there was a major machlokas rishonim what bittul is. So, according to Rashi and the Rambam, so bittul is to distance yourself and your heart from the chametz. And Rashi and the Rambam understood that that is a kiyum of tashbisu. And that's what Tashbisu either means overall, like Rashi says, or maybe the Kesef Mishnah and one Gerus in the Rambam thought it means it sometimes, but that is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu to distance it in your heart. Then you have Tosfos, who disagreed. Right? And Tosfos says that, no, that Tashbisu requires actually burning it, specifically at the time of the Isser, or destroying it. And what Bittel is an act of Hefker. And you saw the whole discussion in the Ran that it's because it is a desire to fulfill the distancing that would come along with the fact that the Gemara says, to bring in another sugya on Dafav, that Chametz is not really in our Rishus, but the Torah puts it in our Rishus. And therefore, it's only kind of quasi-owned by us. So, Gilui Das, this declaration that we don't want it, that's what takes us out of it. And the Ramban had a different version based on that's what distances us from the Chametz and creates a declaration that this is something that we are separated from. So, perhaps the Bala Itter needs to tap into two things in order for there to be a viability of a bracha on Bittel. One is, we have to say it's some kind of a kiyum mitzvah. Right? So if it's just a way of keeping us away from Bayira, Bayimatze, let's say like Tosfos, so then it's not going to make sense there should be a bracha for the reasons that we've said before. According to Rashi and the Rambam, it's a kiyum in Tashbisu. So a bracha at least makes sense from that perspective. But the question is, can you make a bracha on a mitzvah if it's only a belev? Now, the way that Beis Yosef, when we mentioned it at the beginning, the way that Beis Yosef had, it seemed like Beis Yosef really had two versions of why you don't make the bracha on bittel to begin with. So one was that because you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah should belev. And two is that Chazal preferred the nusach on the biur because that's more inclusive. So it actually sounds like a nafkamina of the two reasons is what if you're only doing bittel, like this guy who's traveling. So if the first answer, the Beis Yosef, that bittel doesn't make sense for a bracha, so then that's one thing. But according to the second answer, it sounds like bittel could have made sense, just we prefer biur because it covers both. But if you're only doing bittel, maybe there would have been room for a bracha on bittel. So we need to establish first that it's at least a mitzvah. It's a kiyum in Tashbisu. And two, that even with it being a mitzvah, it's something you can make a bracha on, either to say that Dvarim Shebelev we can handle, or maybe this is different than normal Dvarim Shebelev. Why would you say that? Because some achronim develop, still not going to work with a Beis Yosef specifically, but some achronim develop a theory that even if you wouldn't normally make a bracha on something that was belev, but if the bracha actually brings about some kind of a change, like Hafreshes Trumas and Maisrus, for example, Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes a question in his Tshuvas that since you could do Hafreshes Truma b'machshava, so why is there a bracha on Hafreshes Truma? So his descendant, the Tzemach David, who's the author of the Mikdash David, in his comments on the Tshuvas Rabbi Akiva Eiger, with David Rappaport, so he understands that it's not stama machshava, it's a machshava that's going to create truma, so that kind of machshava is different, it does something. So maybe if you're going to say that this brings about hefker, let's say, and it's a mitzvah of Tashbisu, if you put those positions together, so then that could explain the position of the Bala Itter that you could make a bracha on that. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so just to get a few more points out, I'll just try to get one or two more other issues in here. So the Rambam in Hilchas Chametz Matzah, in Perik Yimel Halacha Hey and Halacha Vav. So he talks about how ideally you're supposed to do Bedika at the night of the 14th. But if not then the next day. And if not the next day, then on Pesach itself and throughout Pesach. And if not throughout Pesach, so then after Pesach also you have to do Bedika, right? Because you have to save yourself from the Isser of Chametz Sha'avar Lava Pesach. And if anyone is holding in Daf Yomi, so that was the sugya yesterday, Daf Chavtas, drop more synergy in. So the idea of Chametz Sha'avar Lava Pesach, so since there's still an Isser after Pesach, so you'll have to do Bedika after Yontif also. But there, the Rambam says, if it's after Yontif, you don't make a bracha on that Bedika. So what's the distinction that you make a bracha throughout all of Pesach, but not after Pesach? So you could say it probably two ways. I guess this is something that Rav Olshan discusses as well. That you could say that the mitzvah midrabanan of bedikas chametz that formalized the process in order to justify a bracha, so that could be true as long as Pesach is going on. But once Pesach is over, so then it's simply avoidance of a negative. Then you have the isser of chametz shavu v'pesach, so you need to avoid that. So therefore, bedika is still necessary, but not in the sense that any longer justifies the bracha. Another way to say it is that maybe the Rambam understands, like we discussed some of the other Rishonim, like the Ran perhaps, that Bedika is really because of Tashbisu. So Kol Zman, that it's still Pesach, so then there is the Kiyum of Tashbisu, and that justifies making a bracha. But once Pesach is over, then it shifts to a different focus. It's just because of Chametz Sha'avar Pesach, and then there is no need for a bracha anymore. And this is something we talked about when we got into the sugya of Tashbisu, and we talked about whether Tashbisu is a active affirmative obligation, like the Menachos Chinuch Safek, or is it basically just an avoidance of the Isser? And the fact that the Rambam says to make a bracha throughout all the course of Pesach, but not after, that was one of the rayas that was brought, that the truth of no debut about this, another, that was one of the rayas that was brought, that Tashbisu is actually an active chiyuv. There is also a discussion that if we associate the bracha with bedika specifically, give you a question. Sorry,
yeah. Lady. I was going to say for Avar Lava Pesach, isn't it also with Tashbisu? It's Ach Bayom Rishon.
Yeah, so that we discussed as well. All right, so thank you for bringing that up. So we talked about the question of how to relate to whether Tashbisu is only on Erev Pesach or throughout Pesach, and we mentioned a few approaches in the Rishonim on that, and it gets into the question also of whether Bayirah, Bayimatzeh should be considered Nitak La'aseh. Right, that if you say that Tashbisu is limited to Erev Pesach, and nonetheless you would say that, like Rashi's opinion, that Bayirah, Bayimatzeh is Nitak La'aseh, so how does that work? Right, according to the Rambam, who says you could get Malkus for Bayirah, Bayimatzeh, so it's not Nitak La'aseh, so then okay, it could be that Tashbisu is just before Pesach. But what about, according to Rashi, that's Beferish not that way? So it seems that Tashbisu was all of Pesach. So we discussed the position of Rav Shlomo Fisher and others, that the active Tashbisu is before Pesach. But it's all premised on the notion, especially if you say that, right, like Rashi does, that Tashbisu is basically just distancing yourself from the Chametz, and yet that is a kiyum of Tashbisu. It's all premised on the assumption that you're not going to contradict it. So the test of Tashbisu essentially is throughout all of Yontif. So the active Tashbisu is before, but Tashbisu is still relevant in that you can't contradict it. before throughout all of Yantif. So it could be that the Bedika is a continuation of that. But once Yantif is over, so then already, then you're separated from Tashbisa. So all of that, that was all discussing Bedika that was late. So we understand that the mitzvah of the bracha is before Bedika, and that would be the night of the 14th. But it could be later. It could be that the Bedika is happening on, during the daytime, or on Yantif itself, or throughout Yantif. But what if you finish the Bedika, but you haven't done the Bir yet, and you forgot to make the Bracha before the Bedika? So can you make the Bracha then? Can you make the Bracha al Bir Chametz before the actual burning of the Chametz? So, you know, it seemed to make sense that you could. And that's what it sounds like from the Rush. However, it doesn't sound like that from the Shulchan Aruch. Because the Shulchan Aruch says that as long as you're still involved in the Bedika, so then you can make the Bracha. But it sounds like not after the Bedika, even if it's between the Bedika and the Bir. Kiva, you have a question on that?
Because I think it's also the Rush, you know, who says you shouldn't talk. There should be like a hesachadas in between the bracha and the bedika.
Right.
So I just, yeah, I guess just how that like formulates the mitzvah itself and how it relates to other mitzvahs in terms of the bracha that, and they don't have a, there's no issur of talking.
And what would create an interruption? You know, sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. It depends what creates an interruption. And we assume that here this connects to the beginning of the process. But what happens, Lamaisa, if you already did the Bedika? Now let's say you're holding by the beer. So it sounds like from the Rambam that you could still make the Bracha then. But from the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't sound like you can. It sounds like only during the Bedika. So the Magen Avraham raises the question that, I don't get it. He says, we discussed last week that there's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Or Zeruah, that the Rambam says that you cannot make a bracha after the mitzvah is over. And the Or Zeruah says you could make a bracha even after the mitzvah is over. So let's say if you shecht an animal, so the Rambam says after you shecht the animal you can't make the bracha, only before the shechita. And the Or Zeruah said even after the shechita you could make the bracha. But the Rambam agrees that mitzvah hanimshaches you could make in the middle. Right? So if somebody puts on tefillin or a talis, and they don't make the bracha before, but they still have the tefillin on and the talis on, so you can make a bracha in the middle. So the Magen Avraham asks, why isn't that true here? Akiva?
Doesn't it become a, the beer comes derabanan?
Well, the Bedika was Drabbanan, though. You made the Bracha before the Bedika, which we're assuming itself is probably Drabbanan. So the question does become, though, what is the Bracha really attached to? Right? If you say it's all one process, like those Rishon who said that was what it was going on, so then it makes sense to say it should be still applicable. But if you say that it's really on the Bedika, and the language is whatever it is for whichever reason, so then maybe even though the beer is the goal, but once you finish the active mitzvah of Bedika, maybe it still doesn't apply anymore. So that's one aspect. It seems to go to that question of how do you define what's really the goal of the bracha. But also, there could be a little bit more to it. There is a discussion about this in the Sefer Knesset Avraham. The Knesset Avraham is a very intricate shiurim from Rav Avraham Farbstein, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chevron. And he talks about Tosfos and Ardaf, and Daf Zayin, where Tosfos talks about how do you make the bracha on a lulav, considering that if you want to make the bracha only over la'asiyas and not over la'over, so you want to be holding it. But if you're holding it, you're already yotze. D'agvei nafik bei. So Rishonim have different approaches, as we talked about, and the approach that we usually focus on bizman hazeh is to turn the asrog upside down until after the bracha, because we assume that we're not yotze the mitzvah until it's in its right position. Darach gedilasan. But Tosfos over here discusses that the fact that the nanuim still have to happen, that's a justification for making the bracha afterwards. So Shagas Aryeh and others talk about what is the significance of that, but the main mitzvah, Manat Torah, you've already done. So the fact that there's still some fulfillment of the process allows the bracha to take place afterwards. How do you understand that? And is that that means that the original act is still continuing, so the bracha still makes sense? Or is that saying that you can make a bracha even on a lesser part of the mitzvah? So that's something that you need to figure out. It's a subtle point. And Rav Farbstein discusses in his shiurim that maybe that's also what's at play here a little bit. How to understand that idea, how would that plug back into this question of making the bracha before the beer, even after the bidika. But again, it could also just go back to the question of what is the bracha really attached to? Is it attached to the whole process, or is it attached to bidika specifically as a discrete chiyuv d'rabbanan? Okay, so far so good? Okay, so let's chazer the chazara. Now let's just recap what we said. But I think we were able to include almost every sugya that we did, almost every sugya that we did in the context of this question of the bracha. So you see, when the Gemara says that mibirchosov shaladam nikarim talmid chacham, you see that you can tell a person's a talmid chacham based on his bracha. So you see how much is included in a bracha. That a bracha has the potential to trigger, like a memory, that just trigger the association of everything that has to do with the mitzvah. Every question that you have in the bracha brings up every other detail of the mitzvah, so it's a very beautiful thing to consider. So, with that, so let's recap. What did we speak about? So we talked about why is the bracha recited now? What's the chiddush of the Gemara that you make a bracha at all, and that it's specifically now? So the Ritva said it's in order to show that the bedika is the part of the Biur process. It's all basically one idea, and the Rishonim talk about the idea of Biarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis as to indicate that that's what Biur begins, taking it out of the house. So that was synergy to our Kisavo Shir. And also the Ran, and the Ran is L'shitaso, because if you understood that Bedika is a Kiyum in Tashbisu, that Minat Torah could be either Bedika or Bittel, Midraban, and it's both, so then we understand the Bracha correlating to that. But what about Rashi and Tosfos, that it's more the fear of something, of eating chametz, or of being over Bayro, Bayimotze? So, how do we understand that? So that could be relevant to the Rush. The Rush says, the Gemara tells to make a bracha now, because you might think it's not so much of a mitzvah, and therefore we have to be told to make a bracha here. So the truth is, you could ask, why is it a mitzvah at all? If we're just avoiding a problem, so why is that a bracha situation? You don't find brachas in such things, such as searching for worms in fruit. You don't make a bracha on that. Then the Nesivus compares Bedikas Chametz to that. So why should there be a bracha on Bedikas Chametz? And in fact, that's why the Pnei Yeshua and the Noidi Behuda don't like Rashi's opinion here. And the Tzlach has his discussion about why Rashi didn't invoke Teshbisu. And the Tzlach connected it to the idea that the Safek here would not have required Bedika if it was just to avoid Tashbisu, but for the Losa say, then it does. That's why he talks about that. But once we're doing that, so then we use the Tashbisu for the bracha, because that's the positive mitzvah. But what seems to be the case is that what Rashi and Tosfos are getting at is that Chazal made a mitzvah because of this motivation. So we have a mitzvah d'Rabbanan of Bedika to make a bracha on, and as Revulsion points out, so we have sugyas along the way that emphasize that there is a mitzvah here, two of which we discussed at some length, the concept of Zerizim Makdim in the mitzvahs, and also Nuchal Eil Inish, Remember Mitzvah Mamone, which emphasized that there is actually a mitzvah status to this avoidance. And Rabbi Nadavid writes that the Sog Mar is to emphasize the bracha even on the Rabbanan, and that was the Sog in Shabbos. We spoke about that as well, about the Chiyuv of Dinim Rabbanan, where that comes from, and Los Asur and the like. And the Mitzvah Eisen says that even a Drabbana that's on a Safek, like the Magid Mishnah that we spoke about, and to figure out why that should make a difference here, but that was the point that he brought in. And then the question of why this phrase specifically of Bir Chametz, the question of Al or Liv, we talked about separately, that the Gemara brings up about the different implications of Al and Le, but why is this the verb choice, the choice of Bir Chametz? So some of the Rishonim say that this is the Ikar HaMitzvah, that in that, as the Ritva quotes, even if you say Bedikas Minat Torah, but the whole point is to get it to Bir, and if you would search and not destroy, you wouldn't accomplish anything. And Rabbeinu David, that it's a more inclusive language, and vice versa is not true. And so that the Beis Yosef also says that you can't make the bracha on Bittel, because Bittel is Belev, and we discussed possibly what that theory could mean. Why should you not make brachos on mitzvah shebelev, and how this is one of the go-to sources that's often used to explain why a mitzvah doesn't get a bracha. We tried to speculate a little bit why that should be. And the Beis Yosef also says it's because the language of Bir includes both, as opposed to Bittel. And the second answer in the Beis Yosef seems to suggest that maybe differently than the first answer, that maybe it could be possible to make a bracha on Bittel, just it's not the language that we choose. And then we discuss the question of somebody who's doing Bedikah early, the two scenarios in the Gemara, that either you're traveling within 30 days or you're traveling before 30 days but you plan on coming back. So the Ramah says don't make a bracha, but the Bach and the Ritva, according to the Ra'ah, are machalik, and they say that you do make a bracha within 30 days, just not before. And the Hesber could be that maybe the mitzvah specifically is within 30 days, and that's the sugi we saw, Shlosh Shavuot Kodem Achag, that within 30 days you're in the zone and the chiyuvim apply. And before 30 days, there's just a functional issue that you might come to run into chametz, and therefore we search for that reason, but it's not something that gets a bracha. So we also saw that if somebody is on a boat on Erev Pesach away from home, so then he's just mevatel l'chametz wherever he is, and the question whether to make a bracha on that, the Baal Yitr says you should make a bracha, and the Torah says not to because it's belev. So we tried to understand what do they disagree about, why does the Yitr say you should make a bracha. So either maybe he disagrees with this whole Yisod that you don't make a bracha on things shebelev, or maybe he holds that Bittel is not purely belev, that it has to be spoken out loud like the Bach says, or maybe it goes to the question of what is Bittel. So according to Rashi and the Rambam, Bittel is a kiyum and tashbisu. According to Tosfos, it's not Tashvisu. It's just to keep us in Ba'ira Ba'yimatze, and it's Hefker. And according to the Ran, it's a Gilei Das, that we don't want the Chametz to be with us. And according to Ramban, it's also based on that Gemara and Avav of Eina Bershuso, but it's a more of a process. And we said in order for the Bala Iter to work, like Revulsion discusses as well, presumably we need two things. We need to be a mitzvah, not just an avoidance of something. So it has to be Tashvisu. But it also has to be a mitzvah that you can make a bracha on. So either he has to say he can make a bracha on Dvarim Shebelev, or maybe it's more than that, that maybe because it makes it hefker, so the idea that some achronim have, that you do make a bracha on something Shebelev if it brings about a status, like Trumas and Maestros, as the Tzemach Tzevich said to answer the question in the Tshuvas Rabbi Akiva Eger. And then we discussed the question of the Rambam's position that you make a bracha throughout. If you don't do Bedikah that night, then the next day, or throughout all of Yontif, but not after Yontif, even though you have to do Bedikah then also to prevent Chametz Shavuot Pesach. So why no bracha after, but a bracha throughout until? So here are a couple of possibilities. One is that the mitzvah, the rabbanan of Bedikas Chametz, is only relevant during Pesach, and after that it isn't. Or maybe more so, that Tashbisu is what's relevant here, and that's only applicable during Pesach, but not after. And this was one of the rayas the Achronim brought, the Rambam's position, that Tashbisu is a active responsibility, and not just the avoidance of Ba'yirah Ba'yimatzeh. And we got into a little refresher about whether Ba'yirah Ba'yimatzeh, Lav Hanita Kla'aseh, related to Tashbisu, does the Chiyuv directly correlate, or is it separate from that? And then we talked about the question of, okay, that's if you did Bedika late, but what if you did Bedika on time, and you finished the Bedika, but you didn't make the Bracha, so can you make the Bracha after you finish the Bedika, before the Bir? It sounds like from the Rush that yes, but from the Shulchan Aruch it says not only as long as you're involved in the Bedika itself, and the Magen Avraham says, I don't get it, because yes, the Rambam says against the Orzaruah that you can't make a bracha after a mitzvah is over, but you can make a bracha if the mitzvah is still continuing, like Tefillin and Tzitzis. So why not also here if you haven't done the Beer yet? And that got to the question of how the mitzvahs relate to each other, and is that the bracha specifically on the bedika, or is it really on the whole process? And also, as Farbstein discussed, how does this apply to the Tosfos in our daf? It talks about lulav. It says that you can still make the bracha on lulav after you pick it up, because you haven't done the nanuim yet. So what's the relationship between the nanuim and the ikar mitzvah? And is that just a way of saying that you're still in the middle of the act, and therefore a bracha still makes sense? And how exactly would that parallel this? So all of that reflects back on our ikar sugya. So we got to Chazir today, the sugya of brachas mitzvahs, the sugya of what ikas chametz is about, the sugya of whether bayirah bayimatzeh is a lavanitek laaseh, the sugya of how Bittul Chametz works, the make references to the sugya of Zerizim Akdim L'Mitzvahs and Nichle L'Inishim Ev Mitzvah Mone, the sugya of somebody leaving before Pesach and he has to do Bedika under those circumstances, the idea of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, and hopefully that gave us a little bit of an overview on some of the themes that we were zoche to do during this wonderful Zman. So I hope that that was all helpful and meaningful. And I look forward to the one-on-one discussions that we'll have tomorrow. And please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions or issues. Akiva, are you reaching out now? Are you raising your hand? No. Okay. So please do not hesitate if you have any questions or issues. And again, refuah shleima to all who need it. And look forward to, God willing, seeing you all tomorrow. Have a safe and healthy day.
Thank you.
Thank you.